to the Animal Voices Radio Show on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. My name is Joanne Chang, and I'm joined here today by my co-hosts Allison Cole and Carissa Thorpe.
Hello.
Hi. And, of course, in the control room is John Pranger, and Allison is doing controls today as well. Today we're going to have on the show some interviews that I did earlier today at Animal Rights Day in Vancouver at the Art Gallery, and we're going to hear that shortly. And we're going to interview Nicole Forsyth from United Animals Nations regarding their campaign called My Dog is Cool campaign. So this week, I found out that an acquaintance, someone I work with, suffered a heart attack, and now he is waiting for triple bypass surgery. So this is actually the second time this year that someone I work with had a heart attack. And, you know, it just shocks me how people outside of the vegan world seems to be somewhat unaware of what causes arteries to be clogged. It's quite surprising to me. But, you know, this first guy that I, when he returned to work from bypass surgery earlier this year, when I asked him about it, he basically said to me, "You know, I don't know why I got my arteries got clogged because I walk every day with my wife." And, you know, there are people my age, I'm finding out, that are just getting it. Like it's some sort of, you know, disease.
Like a virus.
You just catch, like a cold or something, you just catch it. And, you know, he just thinks it's really strange. So it's just, you know, my jaw nearly dropped when I heard this, because you think, you know, after he's had the surgery, he comes back from, you know, the doctors, they would tell him something about dietary choices.
Yes.
But apparently not. And I just dug up some statistics about heart disease, and it's quite scary. Each year, heart disease kills about 42% of the people that die. And this is more than all of people killed in war, suicide, AIDS, road traffic accidents, lung cancer, breast cancer, respiratory diseases, prostate cancer, and infectious parasite diseases combined.
That is crazy.
I know. And I'm thinking, what the heck? You know, we have this war on drugs, right? Like, it's so bad. It kills all these people. And it is. It's a really bad thing. And lots of people suffer from it. But the world population of people that die from it is 0.1% of all the people that die each year die from drug use. Yet 42% of mortality rate comes from heart disease. But why isn't our government declaring war on meat, milk, and eggs?
I don't know.
They won't admit that that's the cause.
And it's very strange. I know some of our listeners would know who Dr. McDougall is. He is a doctor in California who has successfully been reversing heart disease for over 30 years now. And he doesn't believe in using drugs or anything like that. He just reverses heart disease through diet. He puts his patients on a vegan diet, and he's been very, very successful in reversing heart disease. So, you know, I strongly encourage people who are listening right now who may be suffering from heart disease or know someone who may be suffering from the disease to go on to Dr. McDougall's website, which is www.drmcdougall.com, and you'll be able to download lectures from his website about, you know, eating your way to health. So you don't need drugs, you don't need bypass surgeries. All you need is to eat a balanced plant-based diet. And in the words of Hippocrates from 460 BC, "Let food be thy medicine. Thy medicine shall be thy food."
That's a great quote. You know, I'm always saying food is medicine, right? Why take pills when you can take food as your medicine? And I didn't know that Hippocrates knew that in 460 BC.
Exactly.
That's an amazing quote. I'm going to pass that on in the future for sure.
Yeah. Also cheaper that way.
Much cheaper.
Yeah, no kidding. Who wants to be spending tons of money on drugs or even be putting that garbage into yourself?
When you can just eat your way to health.
You know, 1.5 million Americans are hospitalized every year, and a couple of hundred thousand are killed by perfectly legal drugs.
Wow. Right. And why deal with the side effects when you can just eat good food, right?
And by the way, they're all tested on animals, safe, so.
Yeah, even another reason not right. to use those drugs.
Because they're made for monkeys, not humans.
Mm-hmm.
So, Allison, you got something to share with us, I think.
Yeah. Here's a topic that I find kind of interesting. If you're a person who openly speaks up for the animals, as we are here, I'm sure you may have heard some really strange comments before from those who perhaps mm-hmm. thought that what they were saying made perfect sense in arguing against animal rights. I was reading the animalrights.about.com website some time ago when the author of the website, Doris Lynn, invited her readers to share with each other some of what she calls the weirdest, silliest, most bizarre, most clueless animal rights comments that they've ever heard. And I'd like to share some of these with you to offer our points of view on the types of comments that I find to be pretty typical after having been an animal advocate for many, many years now. So, the first comment is by a person named Nicole. She says, I laugh when you tell someone you're vegan and they go, but you still eat chicken and fish, don't you? When did chicken and fish become vegetables? So that's her comment. So, you know, my typical response to make any clarifications to people who think that I eat chicken and fish and who think that they're vegetables, I just tell them that I don't eat anything that has a face. And I think that makes it pretty clear for them. What do you
think? Yeah, I've heard another one. I don't eat anything with a mother.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one, yeah. too.
And then I think it might be John Robbins or someone who has this great quote, which I use all the time when people say, do you eat fish? He says, well, fish is not a floating vegetable, is it?
They don't grow on trees either.
They don't grow on trees.
And then people go, oh, yeah, you're right. I never realized that.
Oh, they're animals.
Another comment that someone posted was, if we don't eat meat, there will be an overpopulation of animals and we'll all die.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
Hate that.
We'll all die. We'll be overrun by all the cows, 3.2 billion cows. This isn't likely. Obviously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think this is a really strange argument for people to make to be for eating meat, because mm-hmm. how likely is that, you know, first of all, would that ever happen? Would the whole population ever just stop eating meat all at once?
No.
No.
And you know what's really ridiculous? It's people don't understand how the farming system works, and that's why. And, you know, us, we know that every single animal we eat came to this earth because some guy is at the farm milking the males for their semen, and another guy is in the farm sticking that semen into the female. So it's like it shouldn't even be. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They're not
it's
even
not
mating.
Natural.
No.
And it's not like all those animals would just be languishing around the world.
No.
because it's not going to happen that people are just going to start eating meat all at once.
No.
There's a lot of supply and demand, right?
And they're brought to this world by humans
because
producing
there's
them
demand.
Because there's demand.
Yeah.
And there's a strong control over that.
I do predict one day that people are going to start eating less and less meat, and and therefore there'll be less and less animals being made.
Exactly.
So, Joanne, have you ever had some people say really silly things or yell out silly things to you as you're protesting in public on the street?
Well, it's never that original, right? It's mm-hmm. always the same three comments. Oh, go get a job. Go get a life. Mm-hmm. Why are you wearing leather shoes? And usually it'd be like rubber shoes or something. So we started coming up with things to respond. Like, for instance, people would always say, go get a job. And it's always like after work, after work when we're protesting or on the weekends. So we just decided, we'll just point out the time and date every time someone says that. Go mm-hmm. get a job. It's Saturday. So
I know you used to do a lot of your protesting in the evenings after work.
Yeah,
I remember
it's 8 p.m.
Thanksgiving, like every day after work. Yeah, one comment here that someone wrote in was someone yelled at a protest, you should be home getting married and having kids, not protesting. And the person says, it was the strangest thing I've ever heard at a protest, and it just made me laugh. made me laugh. How can I take mm-hmm. something like that seriously?
Another thing that we used to do is people always have the same five comments. So you put it in a bingo sheet, and then every time someone comes by and says a comment, you check it off. And then once you get, you know, four that in a row across, you get bingo.
That makes it fun. And then you get some kind of prize. You get to be the next person to make a snarky comment to them.
Right.
Yeah. So, and what I think people just say these crazy things because they only have a couple moments to make an impression
right.
on you.
Right.
Therefore, they say the first thing that comes to their heads, and usually it's not the most intelligent thing.
No.
So, you know, there you go. So I think we'll stop for now. There's other ones here. Maybe we'll discuss them another time. It's kind of fun to just, you know, as a lighthearted topic of discussion to talk about some other things that we hear about on the streets sometimes. So you have
Earlier today I was at Animal Rights Day. As we all know, it's happening at Downtown Art Gallery this morning, and there are a few organizations out there. I was only able to speak with three really amazing organizations and not all of the ones there, but I think I have a recording that we can play right now.
I'm here at the Animal Rights Day with Janice Gillette from Hearts on Noses, a mini pig sanctuary. Welcome to Animal Voices, Janice.
Hi, thank you for having me. What a day. Pretty windy down here for this country girl in the city today. Not used to all this noise. I'm used to the sounds of birds and oinks.
Right, all the oinks. You're missing them today.
All the wheeze. Yeah, I'll have to phone Mom and get her to feed the kids breakfast because I left so early this morning. None of them were out of bed at 6:30 this morning.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about Hearts on Noses?
I rescued a pig in 1993. I found him on the property, and that was Willie. And he's the one who taught me everything about pigs, and I just fell in love with him. And the next thing you know, another pig needed a home, and that's kind of the snowball effect that happened to me. There's 40 pigs out there now, two of which are the big farm pigs, mm-hmm. and totally different in personalities and... Yeah, very interesting. Every one of them is different. Everyone is an individual. They all know their names. They all come when they're called.
And as someone who rescues pigs, what do you want the public to know about pigs?
Well, some of these guys, a lot of people question, well, why do I have so many? Don't I find homes? It's very difficult to find homes for potbelly pigs here in Canada. In the States, bigger population and more people have them, better equipped veterinarians down there because they have more experience with pigs. Here in Canada, we don't have the vets here that know too much about them. And we're so far between each other who loves them, too. You know, not everybody's going to want a pig as a pet. They're so smart. Unlike a cat or a dog that can be basic, a cat will take care of itself and a dog can be dominated. That's not going to happen with a potbelly pig.
So you said that pigs are really smart. I don't think that's something that people know about. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, Comet, he came into the property as a piglet, but by the time winter was through and I was moving him outside, I had duct tape on everything. Duct tape all over my cupboards, duct tape on the fridge, big, thick black strips to keep him out. He could get in anything. Help himself. He would whip open that door, grab something, and then run with it. Yeah, they look up at you when you talk to them. They respond with a waggy tail. I can call one pig in a herd of 12, call one name, and that one pig will hear his name and wag his tail. Yeah, so they really do know. They know who they are. Yeah.
Is there anything coming up for Hearts on Noses or anything you would like to promote?
Well, we just relocated the sanctuary from Maple Ridge to Mission December 1, 2009. So I'm still in the stages of summertime for people on farms. It's all about preparing for winter. So that's where I'm focused right now is bringing in. I'm going to need probably about 20 units of bark mulch to line all those pens so the pigs aren't in mud this coming winter. Probably some ditch work, and I'm like, okay, how am I going to do this all by myself? Do you know, you guys know how big 11 units of sawdust is? Woo-wee, that's a mountain.
And it costs a lot of money to do those things as well.
Yeah, you know, wood products have all gone up, whether it's chips or not. You know, that still cost you a lot of money. And the sanctuary is pretty well insured with support by wonderful people from all over the world, even in Texas, Ontario, sponsoring a pig. They send me $25 a month. They can do it on Canada Help or PayPal, or even my mom and my sister write post-dated checks, and I just pull out that $25 donation every month and deposit it, and that way I know there's always money in the bank for their food.
And can you tell us how to contact you so if people want to make a donation?
Yeah, they can call me at 462-0958. That's in Mission, 462-0958. Or you can find me on just Google Hearts on Noses. You'll find my website there. I'm on Facebook and I'm on Blogger. Heartsonnoses.com is our website.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today, Janice.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Take care. I'm joined here now by Olga Betts from VRRA, Vancouver Rabbit Rescue and Advocacy. And can you tell us a little bit about the organization, Olga?
Yes, we started it in 2003, mainly because there wasn't anyone helping rabbits, exclusively at that time. And we have a whole bunch of bunnies that we rescue from various situations, and we keep them safe and find them homes and give them medical care if they need it. And that's basically what we do.
And as an advocate for rabbits, what is the most important thing you want people to know about rabbits?
Rabbits make very nice house pets. They use a litter box like a cat and can live in your house with you. They don't need to be shut outside in a hutch. They're not good pets for children. They're best pets for either a family or adults. Children tend to get bored with them and neglect them, or, you know, just plain get tired of looking after them like most children do. They're also need to be neutered or spayed. That's a very important thing to remember. If you're going to have a pet bunny, makes them much nicer pets. They're less aggressive. They're calmer, quieter. They don't dig and chew as much. Their urine and feces don't smell as much. It's just very, very advisable to have each bunny neutered or spayed.
So I don't think most people know about that, because about the kids and rabbits, because you see people buying rabbits for their kids for Easter and keep them in little cages. Do you think it's good for rabbits to have them kept in cages?
No, they shouldn't. Certainly should. If they're in a cage, it should be a large cage, and they should only be in it for a certain amount of time. Just like you might put your dog in a crate overnight or while you're not around, but the rest of the time it's out of the crate. You wouldn't keep a dog or a cat shut in a cage, and a bunny is no different. They also should not be sold in pet stores. That's one of the things we're trying to get rabbits, baby rabbits especially, out of pet stores, because the impulse purchase is much too easy. Oh, it's so cute, let's get it. And then they live for 10 years, and they require a lot of care. And people making an impulse purchase don't even think of that. They just think it's cute, and they want it right now.
Mm-hmm. And you have a very interesting event coming up, I think, in the fall. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, we have our annual Rabbit Festival, and it's going to be on October the 9th, I believe it is, which is the Easter... No, it isn't the 9th. It's the Saturday before the 9th on the Easter long weekend, be the 7th. And it's a great festival where we give all kinds of people information about rabbits. We give checkups for rabbits. We give grooming and nail clipping. It's just a really fun event. You can bring your bunny or you can come and learn about rabbits. And it's going to be at the Wise Hall this year on Adirondack Street.
Great. And can you tell us a little bit about some of the rabbits that you have at your rescue?
We have a lot of different kinds of rabbits. We have large ones, small ones, old ones, young ones. They're all neutered and spayed. Many are excellent pets. Some of them will be shy. Some of them are older. People tend to want all the young, pretty ones, but we have some very nice older rabbits that also need homes, just like there are older cats and dogs that need homes. It's very sad to have them sit in a cage too long in our shelter. But we have some. One little girl has three legs. She lost her leg, but she's very active and young and bright and nice little bunny. We have one poor little rabbit with us that was put by the side of the road in a cage with a free sign on her. And she's safe now. Hopefully we'll get a home where someone wouldn't consider doing that.
And if someone wants to volunteer or adopt a rabbit, how can they get in touch with you?
Probably the easiest way is to go to our website, which is vrra.org. And you can see all the information about volunteering and all about what we do and the bunnies we have for adoption. And our rabbit festival information will be on there, too.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us, Olga.
You're welcome. And it's been a great day here.
Thank you. I'm here with Nicole McLelland from Saints. And welcome to Animal Voices, Nicole.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about Saints?
Saints is a senior animal sanctuary located out in Mission, B.C. We're located on 3 acres. We do have 120 different animals there, ranging from dogs, cats, bunnies, horses, cows, one llama, 3 pigs, 3 goats. I'm sure I'm missing someone, but we have a lot of animals. They're all either senior or special needs, and they come to us from a variety of different ways. We get a lot of them from the local SPCAs and animal shelters, as well as vet clinics that we work with and elderly owners surrendering them when they go into care themselves.
Do you find it hard to find homes for senior animals?
We do actually get about 30 to 40% adopted annually, which is pretty good considering these animals were once deemed unadoptable, and that's how they came to our care. So it is difficult. It takes a special kind of person to want to do that because you never know how long you're going to have the pet, and some people do adopt them knowing that they won't have them for that long. You could have 3 months, you could have 6 months, you could have 2 years with them. It's not always up to us to know. So it's hard, but there are people who do decide to do it, and we actually have people who have adopted multiple times from us. Once their animal has passed away, they come back and get another one because they know it's an important thing and the animals still need a home even though they're old.
That's really wonderful what you're doing. Now, I know people like to adopt, you know, puppies, kittens, all the young animals, but can you tell us some benefits in adopting senior animals?
For sure. They're a lot more mellow. I can't say that they don't chew your stuff because two of my dogs that I adopted from Saints eat everything of mine, but they definitely like to relax, hang out a lot. You don't have to go and run them for half an hour a day to, you know, get their exercise. They definitely like to hang out and chill with you. I personally don't think I could ever have a puppy or a young dog again because they just exhaust me. So I choose to have the lazy old dogs. So
that's great. Now, do you get people adopting some of your larger animals besides the dogs and cats, like all the larger animals you spoke about?
We actually did get a donkey adopted. I think he adopted last week, and he went to a home that already had a couple donkeys on their property, and they heard about us, I think, through one of the farm vets and decided that they needed another donkey, and so occasionally we do. Our horses usually end up staying for their entire lives. We do have 3 cows, and they will stay together. We have had sheep and 1 pig adopted, and we've had a couple goats adopted. But for the majority to deal with our farm animals, we like to keep them together as a herd, so we don't like to split them up.
Mm-hmm. Do you allow people to come on your sanctuary to visit the animals?
Yes, we definitely do. Once a year, we have an annual open house, and we get about 300 to 400 people who come through on that date. It's already happened this year, but we do allow people to come and visit Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. to around noon. You can always check the website and send us an email and let us know. If those dates don't work with you, we do try to arrange other time, but it does depend on volunteer availability.
I hear you have a fundraiser event coming up. Can you tell us about that?
I sure can. It's on September 18th. It's going to be at the Pitt Meadows Golf Course. It's our annual fundraiser. It's a silent auction and dinner. We're very excited about it. It's our biggest fundraiser, and it keeps getting bigger and better every year.
And if someone wants to volunteer or just come to visit or get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Well, they can check out our website at www.saintsrescue.ca. That's SAINTSRESCUE.ca. Or they can email me at info@saintsrescue.ca.
Thank you so much for joining us, Nicole.
Thank you for having me.
Take care.
So that was really good.
Yeah, that was just three of the organizations there. So if you still want to go check it out, they're going to be there at the Art Gallery on the Georgia Street site until 5 o'clock.
All right. I've got my upcoming events. As Joanne just said, it's Animal Rights Day right now. That's at the Vancouver Art Gallery on the Georgia Street side. So go out and check out the different organizations that are there. On Saturday, August the 7th, that's tomorrow at 7 o'clock p.m., there's a television documentary playing called Wakari, Secrets of the Red Monkey. This is on CBC Television in Canada. Scientist Mark Bowler is on a mission to find the rare and elusive red-faced Wakari monkey. His search takes audiences deep into the remote rainforests of Peru, a dangerous journey of many days. The Wakari is a creature of legend that until today has never been filmed in the wild because its home is 30 meters up in the canopy. To the local people, these monkeys are the guardians of the rainforest. Only they can release the seed pods inside the fruit of the aguaje palm, which feeds the many other exotic animals that share the forest. The naturalist who first described the red Wakari in the mid-19th century called it a monkey of a most grotesque appearance. Now, 150 years later, it may very well become the poster child of the world's last great rainforest, the Amazon. So that's tomorrow, Saturday the 7th at 7 o'clock p.m. on CBC TV. Sunday, August the 8th at 7 p.m., there will be another vegan secret supper at a secret location in Vancouver. Secret suppers, for those who don't know, are basically that, secret suppers that are held at a secret location in the city, and you pay a fee for the menu. This time it's a three-course menu. So on the menu, caramelized onion flatbread pizza with cashew cheese, artichokes, creminis, and heirloom tomatoes, fresh roasted corn polenta with seared zucchini, pesto salsa, and greens, and a dark chocolate blackberry cashew cheesecake with balsamic chocolate sauce. The cost isn't mentioned, but to find out more information and for reservations, you can email vegansecretsupper@gmail.com. On Thursday, August the 12th at 7 o'clock p.m., there will be a vegan dine-out at the Golden Fortune restaurant. This is hosted by Earth Save Canada. This takes place at 4963-4965 Joyce Street in Vancouver. Just opened in April of this year, the new restaurant is family-owned and managed and completely vegetarian. Golden Fortune specializes in traditional vegetarian dim sum and vegetarian Chinese cuisine. You will have the opportunity to sample an 8-course meal at a very reasonable price. These courses will include stuffed wonton and soup, a cold plate combination, chili pepper deep fried oyster mushroom, deep fried seaweed enoki mushroom roots, vegetable chop suey in taro nest, XO sauce colorful gluten balls with assorted vegetables, vegetable fried rice, deep fried tofu balls with ginger and pineapple, and spicy green beans. That's a lot of food. The inclusive price, including tax and tip, is only $16 for Earth Save members and $19 for non-members, but everyone is welcome to attend. To register, please go to meetup.com and search for Vancouver Meatless Meetup. That's M-E-A-T for meatless. And ongoing every Monday, there is a fundraising event for CATCA, which is Campaigns Against the Cruelty to Animals. And this fundraiser is called Bowl for the Animals. This takes place at the Excalibur Bowling Center at 12350 Petullo Place in Surrey near the Scott Road SkyTrain. Have fun bowling and eating veggie and vegan food while helping the animals in need. Bowling for the Animals is here and is happening every Monday. Just get a group of three to six or more friends friends and come out for a bowling evening or afternoon of fun. So the CADCA fundraiser package is $20 per person. It includes two games of bowling, bowling shoes, which if you're a vegan, you just need to bring some non-slippery shoes, a vegan burger with salad or French fries, and you can also have a vegan wrap with salad or French fries with a glass of pop, iced tea, or beer. This price includes taxes and gratuities. So just go on a Monday to Excalibur Bowling Center. At the reception, you have to say that you are going there for the CATCA fundraising to get this special promotional price. And just make sure you're there by 9 o'clock p.m., although the bowling alley is open until midnight. If you have an animal or vegetarian-related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver. And I just want to remind you, you are listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM CFRO. That's Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
All right, it's time for the news now. A three-year-old racehorse named Private Mambo died Sunday at the Hastings Park Racecourse. Mambo was bumped on the way out of the gate by another horse, leading to her unseating her jockey, which in turn caused the bridle to be pulled off of Mambo. She continued to stumble, her face making contact with the surface of the racetrack and causing her blinders to be pulled down over her eyes, leading to her blindly making contact with the inside rail of the racetrack. Then when she veered away from the rail, she ended up in the winner's circle where she fell and slid into a glassed-in atrium and died on impact. Howard Blank, a spokesperson for Hastings Racecourse, said that it was a very rough tragedy to have happen in front of all the viewers at the racecourse. Seven puppies died Tuesday after being loaded into the cargo hold of a plane that was delayed for over an hour on the Tulsa, Oklahoma tarmac en route to Chicago. Temperatures in cargo holds are usually not temperature controlled, and the heat in Tulsa was reportedly already 30 degrees Celsius by 7 a.m. that morning. It is possible that the puppies may have been baked alive, as it can take as little as 15 minutes for a dog to succumb to heat stroke. Investigators are considering this as one possibility for the puppies' deaths. Please keep this in mind the next time you fly with your companion animal, and plan ahead to only travel with an airline that allows you to take your friend in the plane's cabin with you, or road trip as an alternative. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security has announced that it is seeking to expand its canine force, but plans to buy the 3,000 additional dogs from breeders, encouraging more dogs rather than tapping the incredible resources of homeless dogs languishing in shelters across the United States. Statistically, only 20% of dogs trained for service successfully complete the training process, so this could result in as many as 15,000 additional dogs becoming homeless. Many police departments, as well as New England Assistant Dog Services, use rescued dogs of applicable breeds such as Labrador Retrievers, Golden Retrievers, and German Shepherds. Not only would using rescued dogs save lives, it would also save taxpayers' dollars, as adoption rates are much lower than breeders' rates. It would also grant the dogs a chance at living a more fulfilling life and would help to curb the demands for puppies from breeders. Chelsea Clinton is planning her wedding to have a wide variety of dietary options, including gluten-free, vegetarian, and vegan. Though there is still a meat option on the menu, it is reported to be grass-fed organic beef, and there is confidence that, this being touted to be the biggest wedding of the year with 500 guests set to attend, Chelsea and her investment banker husband-to-be, Mark Mizvinsky, will set a precedent for other weddings to be greener and offer more vegetarian and vegan options.
She had her wedding.
Oh, did she?
Last Saturday.
Oh, I missed it.
The biggest event of the...
You didn't get invited?
Yeah, I was there. Yeah.
Did you fly down with your companion animal in the cabin?
No, never, never. Yeah, but go ahead.
Concerned citizens gathered Tuesday north of Union Square outside the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey to protest the city's plans to kill some 2,000 geese during their molting season, when they are unable to fly. The Port Authority brushed off the protest, saying that the call of the geese is necessary to ensure safety and prevent geese strikes against planes in the area. Port Authority Simon Sigmund is quoted as saying, "Our responsibility is to think of safety for people before peace for geese," making light of the situation. 100 geese were killed on Monday already, even though the Humane Society of the United States asserts that Canadian geese can be effectively managed through non-lethal techniques like aversive conditioning, egg addling, and landscape management.
that's all I have.
Thank you so much for that, Carissa. So now we have on the line our next guest. So, summertime. What do you associate the summer season with? Going to the beach or swimming in the lakes? My favorite summer activity is definitely eating watermelon. But summer is not always a happy season for our companion animals if we, as their guardians, are careless. Each year, countless number of dogs, for example, die from heat exhaustion after being left in parked cars. Our next guest, Nicole Forsyth, is joining us to speak about the My Dog is Cool campaign. Nicole is the president of and CEO of United Animal Nations, an organization that focuses on bringing animals out of crisis and strengthening the bond between people and animals through a variety of programs, including emergency, sheltering, disaster relief services, and financial assistance and education. Welcome to Animal Voices, Nicole.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So how common and widespread is this problem of dogs being left in hot cars in the summer?
Unfortunately, there's not a lot of good data. A lot of the local animal control agencies receive hundreds of calls, but there's no central database to track all of this. Mm-hmm. We follow a lot of news articles, you know, across the country during the summer months, and it's amazing how many we see, and that's just an indication of the ones that actually get reported by the media, which means there's probably thousands every year.
Right. Can you give us an example of an incident that happened recently this summer?
Yes, actually, there was just a recent one that was in Austin, Texas, of a dog whose name was Stedman, and his owner left him in the car for, he says, about 20 minutes while he went into a store, and some other person saw the dog in the car, was obviously in distress, was having seizures at that point, which is not a good sign. And so he called 911, which is definitely the right thing to do, but by the time the fire department came, broke into the car, the dog was alive, but in really, you know, horrible condition. They took the animal to the vet. The dog had an internal temperature of 43 degrees Celsius, which is way higher than, you know, a dog's normal body temperature ranges between 38 and 39 degrees Celsius. And the dog had to be euthanized shortly after arriving.
Oh my God.
He was suffering from heat stroke, seizures, vomiting. His body was covered with broken blood vessels. So it is not a good idea to leave a dog in a hot car. It's really a horrible thing to imagine a dog being trapped in a car when they can't get out, they can't control their own life. They depend on us to take care of them. So it's really unfortunate to hear these stories.
And that was just for 20 minutes, right? And,
yeah.
You know, I think the danger of leaving dogs in cars is that it's a difficult situation to assess. Like, most people living in mild climates, like in Vancouver, can probably leave their dogs in the car while they go pick something up in the store for about, you know, like 8 to 9 months of the year without having anything bad happen to their dogs. So when the weather starts to get warmer, they may not even think about it. So how does someone know when it's too hot to leave their dog in the car?
Well, we recommend, you know, to be on the safe side, to never leave your dog unattended. I mean, that's just kind of a sort of the best way to do it.
Okay.
You never know what's going to happen to you. You could get, you know, sidetracked. You could end up meeting someone in the store or suffering a long line at the cash register.
Mm.
So it's always a good idea to, you know, it's the best plan is to leave your dog at home where they're safe. But if you have to bring your dog out with you, our website, actually, mydogiscool.com, has a really neat tool. It's a weather tool where you can put in your zip code. And I don't know if it works in Canada. I have to check on that. I didn't ask about that. But you can put in probably a zip code for a similar, you know, Seattle area and find out whether it's too hot to bring your car that day.
Yeah.
So it just kind of has an automatic tool there, which is really nice. But just for an example, you know, even when it's 22 degrees Celsius outside, the car inside can get to be 47 degrees Celsius within 1 hour, even if the windows are cracked. So, you know, even a relatively mild day, if you're going to be long, you know, or you think you're going to be only gone for a little bit, but it's actually going to be longer, it could still be pretty dangerous.
Wow.
I think people just really don't have any idea, first of all, how hot it can get in the car, but also how difficult it is for dogs to respond to warm temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like people. They actually can't dissipate heat the same way as humans. They don't sweat. They have to dissipate all their heat through panting. Some of it is dissipated through the pads of their feet. So I think people get this, have this, you know, myth that they're tougher than us. And actually, right. when it comes to heat, they're very vulnerable.
Huh, didn't know that. Now, I'm one of those people who never miss an opportunity to approach someone who leave their dogs in the car in warm, sunny weather. But, you know, often my concerns are met with angry dog guardians who say things like, I've left the window open a crack and I haven't left him long enough for there to be a concern. Do you think there's a cause for concern when people leave their dogs in the car on a sunny day with the window cracked open?
Yes, it's still, there's a study done by Stanford University that demonstrated that even if you crack the windows, it makes very little difference in the temperature in the car.
Okay, unless the window is wide open and the dog can actually jump out.
Right, if they could escape, then maybe that would be different. But then you've got another issue on your hands.
Right. Now, you have UAN has a very striking campaign poster with a photo of a dog inside an oven, and the caption on the poster reads, "A hot oven or a hot car, it's the same thing." Would you say that analogy is an exaggeration?
I wouldn't say so at all. I mean, given mm-hmm. that how hot, if it's 85 degrees outside, the temperature inside a car can become, 29 degrees Celsius, sorry. Mm-hmm. It can become 48 degrees Celsius in half an hour
mm-hmm.
Out in the car. So that's pretty warm. It's getting to be oven-like temperatures. I mean, it's still relatively lower than an oven, but it can be really, really hot inside a car.
Mm-hmm. Now, what kind of physical signs do dogs show when they are overheating?
Excessive panting. Then maybe you might see some drooling, increased heart rate, trouble breathing. They may look really disoriented. Eventually, they'll have some sort of seizure or loss of consciousness. Look like they're having a hard time breathing. If those things are happening, it's at that point they're suffering already from heat stroke, so you'd want to be taking, getting them to the vet really quickly. I think that's the other thing people don't realize that, we hear about all these cases where dogs have died, but there's also these cases where people may think their dog's okay, but if they're exposed to heat for a certain amount of time, they can only withstand an increase in body temperature for a short while before they experience medical problems. So people may not even realize their dog is suffering from some liver damage or heart damage or other kinds of nerve damage caused by being left in hot environments.
Hmm. Do you know how many minutes a dog can be overheating before they die or suffer severe injuries?
It's minutes. I mean, they can't, as soon as their body gets, so their internal temperature is between 38 degrees and 39 degrees Celsius, and once they get up to the 41, 42 degree range, that's when that excessive heat build up and they can't dissipate it, the body's cells actually start to not work properly and then release some dangerous chemicals, and that starts to cause the nerve damage and the liver damage and other damage. So it's pretty quick. I mean, people may have even seen, humans have experienced heat stroke. It can come on pretty quickly. And then once, if you don't alleviate that condition fast, then it can lead to some problems quickly.
So it sounds like there's not even enough time if you call the SPCA or the police. What should someone do if they see a dog in a parked car in the summer?
Definitely try to, call 911 or call a local animal control agency. If you've caught it soon enough, if they're just at the stage where they're panting, that should be enough time. But if they're getting to that state where they're having seizures and vomiting, as in the case of the dog Stedman, then, we're talking some really immediate needs. This dog was rushed to the veterinary clinic and still the damage was too severe. He had to be euthanized. But I think if you can get him early enough, just seeing the dog in a car before they're suffering a lot of symptoms, then you should be okay. The other idea we tell people is to go into the store and try to make an announcement. You have to get the license plate and description of the car, make an announcement, and then hopefully you can get the people to come out sooner.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely try to coach people that they should make those interactions with people as positive as possible, so you don't get the defensive attitudes, telling people, we know you must love your dog, you've brought your dog out with you, I just wanted to let you know, here's a flyer, we have flyers, and cards that you can download from our website or order from our website. And that just has some really non-confrontational public education information. Mm-hmm. So, you know, handing that to them and say, hey, look, you know, you just may not be aware of how hot the car really can get, and I just wanted to share this information with you. And so hopefully that will make them think twice.
Nicole, I'm just curious about calling 911. I've always been under the impression that that is only to serve human beings. Is that not the case if you're calling about a trapped dog in a car, which is, you know, a serious problem?
Yeah, it depends on where you are, where you're located. You know, sometimes 911 is really the only response agency. But if you're somewhere with, you know, a major metropolitan area where there's an animal control agency that's ready to respond.
Well, you wouldn't even have that number on hand, right? Everyone knows 911, and that seems like an obvious choice. But I would just be worried if a 911 operator would say, you know, we don't serve dogs. So that's why I'm asking.
Hopefully they would... you know, direct you to the animal control.
Okay.
I would imagine they'd have a switchboard that can do that pretty quickly.
Okay.
It should be taken seriously. It's you know, it is illegal. It's considered animal cruelty. So it is someone breaking the law. So hopefully they take it seriously. And, you know, I guess just keep calling places. The 911 operator is not responsive. Maybe try calling again. Get the local police number if the 911 number is not working, or find that animal control agency number.
Yeah, that's actually my next question. Can a person be charged for killing their dog by leaving him or her in the car?
Yes, in this case in Texas, the person, you know, each state or, you know, province has different laws regarding what kinds of consequences would come about by animal cruelty conviction. But in this case, if he was arrested and charged with animal cruelty, the person responsible for leaving Stedman in the car, so if he's convicted, he could face a 2-year prison sentence and a $10,000 fine.
Wow.
So it'll be up to the judge to determine whether to do the full prosecution.
That's probably a lot more stricter than what we have in Canada, but that's really good to hear.
Yeah.
Do you have some tips for keeping dogs cool in the summer?
Yeah, definitely having access to water. You know, again, as I said before, with the panting and you know, having them drink water, that can really help them cool down. Also, if there's an access to water where they can put their feet in it, since their feet also can dissipate that heat, water is really the best way for them to stay cool. Having a shady location if they have to be outdoors at all, hopefully indoors at an air-conditioned environment if it's really, really hot outside. Older dogs or dogs with really thick coats or short snouts are particularly sensitive to that. So, you know, people being more conscious of senior dogs, making sure you avoid hot asphalt. I think sometimes people forget that, you know, dogs aren't wearing shoes, and the heat of the pavement can get really hot fast. So being conscientious about that can help too.
I see that all the time, and my coworker actually has a dog, and I said, don't you think that it hurts them? And she's like, oh no, they're tough. So it's
not. I've seen burns on their pads. You know, their pads are tougher than our hands, but they still can suffer damage and can burn.
That's good information. Now, besides the My Dog is Cool campaign, UAN does some really amazing rescue work. Now, I know this because I'm a proud volunteer.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the rescue work that you do?
Sure. Well, our Emergency Animal Rescue Service program, our EARS program, that goes and does some temporary sheltering for animals, and it can be during like a natural disaster or a criminal seizure case, so for puppy mills or hoarding cases, any time where a large number of animals need some temporary sheltering before they can be placed into new rescue homes or shelter environments until they can find new homes. It used to be that a lot of these animal control agencies, local animal authorities would they didn't want to deal with these cases like puppy mills or any time where they had to do a criminal investigation because they didn't know what they were going to do with the dogs. You know, most shelters are overwhelmed already, and so what are they going to do with 200 dogs? You know, they don't want to have to euthanize them, and so they kind of look the other way when they see animal cruelty going on in their community. So this has been a great service for local agencies. It's wonderful for the volunteers because they get to really get some hands-on. It's an incredible experience to watch a dog who's been in one of these horrible, horrible intensive breeding environments you know, fur matted, stuck to the cage, pregnant over and over and over and over again, just no socialization with humans, just these poor, poor, poor dogs. And then these volunteers come in, they clean them all up, put them into new cages, spend time with them, and they just turn around. I mean, they just, they're so forgiving, and they so are ready to be loved once they kind of get used to everything. And so for the volunteers, it's a really amazing experience to put a lot of hard work. You know, there's a lot of sweat and labor that goes into taking care of these, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dogs sometimes at a time. And then the payoff is seeing them turn around and, and seeing those eyes come back to life. It's just amazing.
I know I went on a UAN rescue in Washington last year, and that was the most amazing experience, even though I was covered in dog poop for like 4 days. But, you know, that I would not give that experience for anything. It was so wonderful.
We hear that a lot. It's amazing. Volunteers give up their vacation time and travel a long way sometimes to do hard physical labor for very long days, all because of the reward that they get from seeing these animals. Just their lives are turned around. It's amazing.
And where do these animals go after they have been rescued?
They get placed in other rescue organizations or shelters, depending on, you know, usually they have to go to many different places to kind of spread it out a little bit. But we always we work with the Humane Society of the United States, and they help connect these animals with various placements.
That's great. Do you know roughly about how many rescue operations you do each year?
It's averaging about one a month.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been very busy. A couple times we've done two or three at a time, which gets to be really challenging, but it's an average of one a month. And last year we did 17, so that was actually more than one a month.
Wow. And what situations are you rescuing these animals from mostly?
Well, it seems puppy mills is probably the number one thing next to hoarding. Sometimes it's just a cruelty charge and a neglect charge. We did a case with horses where there were, I think it was over 50 different equines, horses, donkeys, and this, it was just a matter of severe neglect. These horses were not being fed or not being taken care of, and so there were criminal charges brought against the owner of these horses, and we went in and temporarily sheltered them until we had custody, until the Humane Society of the United States got custody of them and we could find placements for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, can someone adopt animals rescued by your organization?
Not directly from us, but they could certainly, if they hear about a particular response we're doing, they could definitely contact us. And, you can hear about any latest responses on our website, which is uan.org. And if you wanted to know more about that particular response or where the animals went, you could contact us through that website and find out.
I know a lot of our listeners are probably wondering, how can someone get involved with your organization?
Yes, definitely. Always looking for more volunteers. Our website, www.uan.org. If they wanted to become a EARS volunteer, there's some information about how to become a volunteer. We also have a humane education program that's called HEAR, which gets a little confusing, HEAR and EARS. That's Humane Education Ambassador Readers, and we train volunteers how to use stories and discussion to build empathy in children.
Great.
It's a very intensive, very rewarding program as well. A lot of volunteers, they love doing the hands-on thing, but then they sometimes get a little overwhelmed with seeing case after case, and they want to do something that they feel like prevents cruelty in the first place. So HEAR is a great option for those people. And if you like kids and want to go into classrooms, that's also a good fit there. And so they can learn more about that program on the website and become a HEAR volunteer. We'll be having a Sacramento, California workshop coming up pretty soon, so that's a good chance to get involved with that. And certainly people want to just find out what we're doing. Connecting through Facebook is a great option. That's facebook.com/UnitedAnimal. So that's another way people can follow what we're doing.
Great.
We're on Twitter as well. And we love to engage people. They can sign up for our e-newsletters on our website as well, get action alerts about things that are happening in their communities, as well as find out about our latest deployments.
Great. We only have a few seconds left, and I was wondering if there's anything else you'd like to add.
No, just thanks for having me on the show and for taking this issue seriously and for and for having a show that tracks animal protection issues. It's wonderful.
Thank you, Nicole. I found it really informative.
Thank you.
Thanks for speaking with us. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. That was Nicole Forsythe, President and CEO of United Animal Nations. To find out more about the organization or how you can get involved, please visit www.uan.org.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And now I just want to let you know we haven't forgotten that we have a special draw for a book to do right now. That's for the book Second Nature, The Inner Lives of Animals, written by Jonathan Balcombe. We had Jonathan Balcombe on the show last week, and I think our listeners were probably as equally fascinated as we were just on the different stories and anecdotes he had to tell about animals. So we have a draw for the book, and I have the entries in my hand, and John is going to pick it out. So drum roll, please. Okay. And the winner of the book is Bernadette Keenan. So congratulations, Bernadette.
Yay.
You won a copy of Second Nature. And we'll be contacting you probably later today by email just on how you can pick up your book. So once again, you are listening to the Animal Voices show. And I just want to say that if you support the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, please show us your support by becoming a member of Co-op Radio, because we do rely on your membership donations to keep the show on the air. To become a member, just go to cooperadio.org, where it will show you how to sign up, and remember to indicate Animal Voices on your donation form. Every bit helps. Next week on the show, please join us again as we'll be interviewing local animal activist Ray Vasudevan of Skinned, who will be telling us about her upcoming anti-fur campaign against Guest Life magazine and the fundraiser she'll be having for it next week. And for our feature interview, I am excited to announce that we'll be having activist Rick O'Berry on the show, who is
wow.
the campaign director of the coalition Save Japan Dolphins, but perhaps is best known for being featured on the Academy Award-winning film The Cove.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be talking to us about his past endeavors to save the dolphins, as well as his upcoming trip to Taiji, Japan. That's happening on September 1st. Please tune in again next week, and thanks for listening. And stay tuned for EcoShock coming up in about 2 minutes.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you.